went interviewing Vincent Perry, March 8th, continuing. I probably should just back up one little bit.
We could, let's see.
Do you want me to... So you think that we can now
come to some valid conclusions about the relationship between a specific porphyry intrusive, the mineral assemblage that is produced from that parent rock, and how that mineral assemblage is trapped and localized within its host. One of the things that the Colorado ore body shows is the fact that you start with a porphyry at a relatively deep level below the surface, that the porphyry contains a very small amount of copper, that there are concentrations of that copper beginning to appear around the contact zone of the porphyry intrusive, so there must be some process by which there is a transportation or movement of the copper ions from the original cooling magma into a more acceptable environment where it begins to deposit, but that there is an incremental increase in the flow of that process, so that as a specific area or trap in the outline of the porphyry is encountered by the upward circulation of the fluid materials, valuable elements are concentrated there and have a chance to further segregate and separate into units that contain perhaps mostly quartz, then a quartz mixed with various silicate minerals such as phlogopite, orthoclase, and possibly apatite, and that proceeding further, that this segregation goes to its culmination in the final dropping out of the rich sulfide minerals, including bornite, chalcopyrite, and probably chalcocite, and the concentration of those in further brecciated structures that may have been that may have existed there in a pre-mineral stage and were receptive to the introduction of these minerals. This is the kind of approach that would be useful in exploring for other high-grade concentrations. And while we haven't used it to any great extent because it's still a rather nebulous approach, I think that there is a probability that further effort in this general direction of thinking will result in concepts that may be useful in finding high-grade ore.
Would there be surface evidence of this?
Well, the surface evidence may exist or it may not. At Cananea, the surface evidence was minimal because this process had occurred and it had more or less died out before it had reached the current or present erosional surface. The one thing that my early surface mapping showed was that at the surface, which was generally iron stained, just as many thousands of square feet around it are iron stained, that there were rather thin, usually 1/4 inch to 1/2 inch quartz seams that ordinarily would be ignored in mapping procedures. I finally made a map of each one of mapped each one of those little veinlets and put them all together on a map, and I was surprised to find out that they formed a pattern which was rudely circular in shape and from a three-dimensional standpoint expressed the ring-like outline of the shallowest underlying ore, which was more than or approximately 1,000 feet below the surface. So those little quartz veinlets must be telling us a story, and they fit in very neatly to the idea that they were the dregs or the final barren results of this complicated process of differentiation, segregation, and transportation of minerals into a favorable rock environment. And I think that the one example I have of that where I tried to apply that was in Cananea at an area we called Sonora Hill. There I found the same kind of little quartz veinlets. We did some drilling on them, and we found a workable ore body, but it was low grade. We found considerable molybdenite associated with that ore. Again, we didn't find the concentration that you would expect if the theory as outlined was applied on simple direct scale. However, in very recent times, in open pitting this low-grade ore body, it's worthwhile noting that the operators have uncovered a plumb of very high-grade ore, which probably represents the same type of thing and may fit into very well into this general progression of events which are so clearly illustrated at La Colorada. And while I was disappointed that we hadn't found something bigger or richer than the original model, still I recall the wise remarks of Dr. Lewis D. Ricketts, who was my mentor and when I first started work at Cananea, and he told me that, don't be discouraged, Perry. Geology is a very complicated matter. And he said, I like to compare what happens in the Earth's crust with the the procedure that we experience when we take a deck of 52 cards and shuffle them up in various ways, and the kinds of combinations that result from those shuffles. He said, you're dealing with maybe 52 geological factors, and they don't all fit together the same way in any one hand. They're always going to be a little difference. And he said, be prepared for that. I think this was excellent geological advice from a very able engineer.
So you're still working on the Cananea?
Oh, yes.
Body yourself.
Oh, yes, sure.
Consultant?
No, because after Mexicanization, why, the Americans are not allowed down there. I was a special guest, I suppose because of my seniority, and I offered to give them a little talk at their technical society, which I did last year, and they were very appreciative, and I told them that they'd better get to work and do more exploration, that there was a lot to be done in Cananea, that opening up a huge open pit might be nice when the price of copper is up and everything is normal in the copper industry, but you'd better face the geological truths and look for other concentrations that might be very acceptable and profitable during hard times. And I don't know how much enthusiasm that resulted in. I don't think that the Mexican government is going to invest any money in looking for ore in Cananea. They're simply going to try to mine out what was developed there by the Cananea Company years and years ago, and there are these tremendous reserves of low grade in addition to this one huge rich plum which is now all mined out, and they are working on that that big pit, and they have an operation which when the price of copper is up makes money. In fact, when I was down there they wouldn't give me any figures, but I could assume that it was a very profitable operation, at least from an operating viewpoint. The difficulty is that they have borrowed money from American banks to the point where they're so deeply in debt that the interest charges have simply become unbearable. And whether an operation can sustain that kind of financial burden is very questionable in my mind. I think that right today an American company operating like Phelps Dodge does could take over that Cananea pit and really make it pay. And I have no question that the Mexican engineers that are running it are equally competent and could make it pay if it were not burdened by tremendous overhead costs in Mexico City and interest charges to the banks in New York that simply crucify the operation.
You mentioned operation like Phelps Dodge. Do they operate in a different way?
No, except that they operate they operate in a different way in the sense that they have financial integrity. They're well-run companies. They're American companies that know how to do business and know how to conduct an operation with due regard for the bottom line and the fact that you have to justify your investment at all times. The Mexicans have not done that. They've simply gone along with the rather simplistic viewpoint that you take over a mining operation that Earlier investors and operators have successfully carried out, and that you can go along and do that without running it with a due regard for financial efficiency.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I saw some maps here the other day, but you are still working.
Well, I'm working on some Butte geological problems, which
I shouldn't be prying, but I saw them there.
I am doing that, and I feel that there's a lot to be done in Butte. I am in the first place trying to capitalize upon the deep drilling which Atlantic Richfield did in Butte, and which revealed a lot of very important geological information. Information, incidentally, that can tie into the concepts that I've been talking about at Cananea. Where does this copper come from? How is process? How does the process evolve? And why do you have concentrations of high-grade ore in certain places? What are the temperature pressure controls? What role does structure play in the picture? I think it's a tremendous one, because structural control is the thing that decides how the solutions are going to be regulated by the pressure and the temperature that they find in the sites as they approach the surface. Mm-hmm. Butte, to me, is something that could be considered in its infancy as a great resource, even though it's produced so much copper in the past. It's a classic example of the relationship between igneous processes and mineralization processes. And this is, in a way, we go back a long time to the early papers that Sales wrote about Butte, and to the work that Chuck Meyer did there, and others that have followed him in trying to understand the theory of economic geology as applied to the Butte picture. Cananea, to me, is just a gigantic natural research laboratory where you can study these things. And I was lucky enough to be there at the time where all the underground workings were open. They were being driven while I was there, so I could go in and observe every day in this underground laboratory some new exposure and new development that might be applicable to geological science.
This was Cananea.
The Cananea, yes.
Of course, you didn't have to worry about pollution in those days either, did you?
No, that's true. There was no concern about that, and the only time that I was really upset about it was one warm summer day. Our geological office was fairly close to the smelter. The air was absolutely still, and the fumes of SO2 were settling so thick over our office that you could hardly see across the road. And I thought, this is terrible stuff to be breathing. So that evening I happened to meet the smelter superintendent, Slats Thurston, And I said to Slats, that was terrible, the smoke up there at that plant. I can't understand how you metallurgists would ever put up with living in that sort of an environment, much less spewing it out all over the landscape. He said, Vin, don't you know that sulfur is good for the blood? It certainly didn't affect me from a health standpoint, and
no.
People in Cananea didn't seem to suffer from the smelter smoke, but and that probably was because we didn't ordinarily have high concentrations of it. There was enough wind there on those broad plains so that the smelter smoke drifted off and was dissipated all down through central Sonora. And nowadays it's worthwhile to drive around Arizona and see the different plants and to see these modern new smelter stacks, not a wisp of smoke coming out of the top of them. Phelps Dodge has made a marvelous effort at recovering SO2 from their smelter gases, and I know Magma has, Inspiration has. I guess they're all living up to the very strict EPA standards on SO2 emissions that they've had to. It's been part of the law. Across the border in Cananea, you can still see the smoke from the Cananea smelter spewing out in the air. They've done nothing to correct that in Mexico, and there's been a lot of discussion about building a new smelter at Cananea, but I don't see how they're going to do it with the economy as it is, unless some complete financial reorganization takes place that would justify putting in that kind of a plant. As a matter of fact, part of the concentrates from Cananea are now being shipped to Superior in Arizona and put through the Magma plant, because the Magma process is so efficient. And even though Magma and Ray are close to Phoenix, a big population center, there's no sign today of any air pollution coming from those smelters. But it certainly does continue to come from the Cananea smelter.
Stopping point?
Well, I think that's probably
you.
Cananea, because I think what we're going to have to do next, you want to go to Chile and do exploration generally outside?
Move, so perhaps we should start that another time. Or
okay.
I think maybe this
No, I think it's
okay.
A good idea.